It's Light the Tower, your daily look around the world of sports with Hall of Fame broadcaster and voice of the Texas Longhorns, Craig Way.
Say goodnight to this one!
On your live, local, and independent home for sports talk in Austin, The Horn.
If we're approaching Memorial Day weekend, and we are, that must mean it's time to say happy postseason baseball conference tournament week to you, right? It is definitely underway all over, including right here in Oklahoma City. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Light the Tower, a truncated, abbreviated version of Light the Tower. Here on the Horn, 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260. We're live, local, and digital. Horn app and at hornfm.com. My name is Craig Way in Oklahoma City, site of the Big 12 Conference Baseball Tournament, which is underway. Actually got underway with the play-in game last night. More on that in a moment. There is baseball going on right now. Started at 9 o'clock, started an hour ago at the Chickasaw Bricktown Ballpark. More on that in a moment. But I'm here for the first hour of the program. Jeff Howe is out today because Jeff is en route to Houston, where at the Houston Touchdown Club, a luncheon going underway where the it will be underway later today, where the keynote speaker is none other than Steve Sarkisian. So Coach Sark will be down there and Jeff down there for Horns 24/7 for the luncheon with Coach Sark. And obviously tomorrow he'll have plenty to talk about that. On the notebook, on this morning's Longhorn notebook, coming up at the bottom of the hour, conversation that I had with the Longhorns grad transfer senior center fielder Mike Antico. So I have that coming up right around the bottom of the hour. So Jeff is not here. I'm here for the first hour of the program at 11 o'clock. I have to get across the street to the ballpark. We're not across the street. Just it's not far from here, but it's I have to get over to the ballpark, which is, I'd say, as the crow flies, 8 or 9 blocks, I suppose. I've got to transfer the equipment over there and begin to set up the booth for our broadcast of Longhorn Baseball today from the Chickasaw Bricktown Ballpark. The Phillips 66 Big 12 Baseball Championship is what it's called. It's the postseason tournament. And, again, we'll have more on that coming up in just a few moments. Meanwhile, just to let you know, since I'll be out starting at 11, that Chad Hastings and Trey Elling will be on board for a little bonus hour that'll come, bonus time actually today. They've got the big swole, big time show edition of Shirts and Skins because they're going to start at 11 and there. And the plan is to take it all the way up to 3:45 when we would have the airtime for pregame for Texas and West Virginia in the Big 12 tournament. Now, having said that, I say the plan because we all know how this tournament can go. If the games prior to the game that your team is involved in drag on, then that means it's going to be late for your game to start because there's 45 minutes in between. And right now, the first game is in the bottom half, I believe it's the bottom of the third inning right now, and Texas Tech is up 4-0 on Baylor in the bottom of the third inning in the first game of the day. So we'll keep you posted on that. But anyway, Chad and Trey will come your way at 11 o'clock, and they'll carry up to when we have pregame start time this afternoon for Longhorn Baseball. One guy who is at his post, as he almost always is our man Jonathan John Donaldson, J.J. Donaldson. You know him as Snoop Daniel, who joins us now. He is the purveyor and majordomo of all things Flex ATX, which, by the way, Snoop, depending on what happens with Longhorn Baseball, you may or may not have a program, right?
Well, tomorrow? Yeah. I already told
or
Zach.
Has it already been?
Yeah, yeah. I talked to Chad, and he said, depending on how the game goes today, I could start on time or after the Texas baseball game tomorrow night, which starts at 7:30, so I might just do a truncated version of my show for an hour.
Well, okay, so let me tell you how this is going to work, Snoop.
Okay.
If the Longhorns win, they would play in the last game of the day, which, as you said, would be scheduled for 7:30. Now, hey, I've done the last game of the day before where it didn't start. Now, there was rain involved this one year when we did it, where it didn't start till 10:30. Now, but again, the rain was involved that year. I've done it before when it's been the last game of the day and it didn't start till 8:45, 9 o'clock. So, and then went, you know, and then the game itself would go to like midnight or so. So, would you consider a late night version of the flex?
Yeah,
tomorrow, if that were the case,
it's better for me to work than to have free time.
Wow, left to your own devices, eh?
Yeah,
is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I haven't been very busy the last couple of days. I don't know who I am, so. I got to get back to work.
So, in other words, if you're not busily doing things like that, then you're kind of almost ready to get yourself in trouble.
Yeah. Oh, not trouble. No. But yeah.
But what? Just bored. Out of
yeah,
your mind?
Bored. That yeah, that's it. Like, okay. Like I go home. Like it was cool. Like making the new bump back music for the UT baseball game thing the other day. That
yeah.
was fun. So that gave me something to do. And then I was just bored. I'm like, oh, God, I don't want to sleep all day. I'm not that kind of guy. Because some people will just, if they have extra time, they just sleep through it. And I'm just, it's not me.
Oh, I know. I've got friends who, given the opportunity, would sleep all day. My youngest son, of course, he's 21, you know, and at that age, a lot of them, they're more than happy to do a lot of sleep. Of course, a lot of them are staying up late at night anyway, and he's one of them, and then would pretty much sleep away most of the day if given the opportunity the next day. But in any event, so we're here in Oklahoma City, and like I said, we'll have the Mike Antico interview coming up, and we'll get into talking more about the conference tournament here in just a few moments. One thing I did want to do, hit on the NBA playoffs. Now, you said you're trying to keep from being bored and stuff. Have you been watching the NBA playoffs?
Well, Craig has been well documented that I gave up gambling like a few months ago, so I'm a recovering gambler. So, you know, like I'm relearning how to watch sports. I mean, this is real, and this is like my therapy session, but you know what? I love the Mavericks because I grew up watching them, and I actually have interest in their story, and what they're doing to the Clippers is pretty entertaining.
Yeah, that's where I was going with this, first and foremost. And we'll get to LeBron and the Lakers in a few moments, but that's where I was going first with the Mavericks beating the Clippers last night and doing it again in Los Angeles. Tim Hardaway, who I've always really liked, Tim Hardaway Jr., had a big game, hit that big three-pointer late, and then Hardaway had 28. But Luka is Luka, of course. He had 39 points, 7 assists, 7 rebounds. So they beat the Clips 127-121. The Clippers, by the way, have lost 5 straight playoff games dating back to last year. Remember they had that 3-1 lead on Denver? And so they lost 3 in a row then, and then they've lost the first two to the Mavericks here, as the series will now shift to Dallas. But it's funny listening to Paul George last night. He said, there's no panic. There's none. It's a competition. He said, we've got to rise to the occasion. Fact of the matter is, if we don't, we're done for. There's no level of concern. Now, that's a weird statement. There's no level of concern. I think you can be concerned without being panicked. I'd say that. You could certainly be concerned. But apparently, according to Paul George, they're not concerned, is what he said. So we'll find out about that. But it's impressive to see. You know, remember last year the Mavericks beat the Clippers in the bubble. They were doing that, and now they were, you know, were doing that down there. But then, of course, the Clippers ended up rolling back through, and the Clippers wind up losing to the Nuggets last year and now losing the first two games to the Mavericks this year. So that was impressive. Okay, so I'm trying to remember.
One more thing, Craig. So, I know Tim Hardaway dad version is more iconic, but is the junior version better?
junior versions.
Tim Hardaway Jr.
The junior version.
Yeah.
I really like a lot. I think he's more of an offensive weapon than Dad was. And I enjoyed when Pops played too. But Junior is something else. He can also ignite a team. And he becomes more of a weapon because so much attention has to be paid to Luka. And then once he gets going, then they've got to devote some time to him. And then that makes, Doncic all the more effective. Luka then, like I said, with the 39 points last night for him. So he becomes all the more effective when they have to devote some attention at that point to Hardaway or to any other offensive weapon. If Porzingis is playing at the time and instead of getting fined $50,000 by the NBA, if he's playing and an effective, whoever it is, somebody else is having to be attended to other than Luka, that's only going to make Luka better. So that's why I think it was, he's a big piece of it, no question about it. And then the Lakers bounce back and beat the Suns last night, 109-102. So they're right there in the series. The series tied at a game apiece. And then tonight, you've got, I know there's probably not that much excitement about Sixers Wizards or even Jazz Grizzlies. But the Grizzlies won game one. So the old thing about a series isn't a series until a road team gets a victory. Well, that's happened in the Memphis Utah series, and Utah is the one seed. So there's some, and that's the case also in the Atlanta New York series, where the Hawks are up one game to none, and now because of the I guess you could say antics, but at least the conversations and displays from Trae Young with what happened with the game winner to beat the Knicks at the Garden in game one, it adds a little more intrigue into game two tonight. So there's that to pay attention to as well. Okay, to the Big 12 baseball tournament. First of all, they had the play-in game last night, and I did go over and watch the play-in game because the play-in winner, of course, was going to be matched up against Texas. So it was the 8 seed, West Virginia, against the 9 seed, Kansas. First time they've ever had a play-in game. The Big 12 put this together because they weren't sure how the conference tournament might be impacted by COVID. So they wanted to make sure they had a representative number of teams. So they decided to have the 8-9 game. I always thought that they should have a play-in anyway, that the 8-9 matchup should happen anyway for a couple of reasons. One, if you're going to do it in basketball, you could do it in baseball as well and make it a single elimination game, and that's what they did. You could do that, one. Two, the other reason is if you really want to reward your regular season champion and your top seed, then you have a play-in. And here's the logic that I'm going on in this. I was tweeting out some of the updates that were going on because Kansas jumped to a 5-0 lead in the second inning. It looked like they were going to blow them out of the water, but West Virginia climbed back into it. And by the time it got to the seventh inning, it was 7-7, and there were 21 hits on the board at the time. And I think I said 14 runs, or at the time it was 7-6. I said 13 runs and 21 hits. I said, yeah, we could be here a little while. And then one person tweeted out something about stupid play-in or something like that, a ridiculous play-in. And I look at it differently. And I was going to look at it differently, would have looked at it differently had Texas not been the one seed anyway, because I was talking about this 3 weeks ago before the Longhorns ended up earning the top seed by virtue of sharing the Big 12 title with TCU and earning the top seed based on their head-to-head series win with the Frogs in Fort Worth earlier this month. So I was talking about, in fact, I was talking about during that weekend series with TCU that I've always felt that they should have all 9 teams in it, let the 8-9 play-in happen, because then the winner of that game would have had to spend at least one starting pitcher and perhaps their ace, depending on the rest factor and who was available, and probably some bullpen guys as well. They would have to do that. So, lo and behold, that's what happened. West Virginia comes back. They score two. They tie the score later. They tie the score. They actually took the lead at 1.65 before Kansas went up 7-6. And then West Virginia scored in the bottom of the eighth and then won it on a walk-off walk in the bottom of the ninth inning, a bases-loaded walk. In fact, there were back-to-back walks that ended up ending the game. And so they won 8-7. So West Virginia advances to play Texas. But what is also notable is for the Mountaineers is that Ben Hampton, who pitched against Texas on Saturday, since the two teams just played last weekend, Ben Hampton threw 86 pitches. He won't be available. Noah Short, who did a good job, and Jacob Waters, who did a good job out of the pen in protecting West Virginia's lead on Thursday night when they won their one game, both pitched last night, but they could be available tonight. Short pitched through 19 pitches and Waters through 15 pitches. They could be available at least for a batter or two or something like that, but they had to pitch in the game. Now, Jackson Wolf is going to get the start for the Mountaineers tonight. He was the guy who got the win for West Virginia last Thursday night. And, of course, Ty Madden will be going for Texas, so you're going to have the two aces of their respective staffs going tonight. But it's been my position that the 8-9 matchup actually helps out the number one seed in that you have to spend some pitching. Now, there is that one factor where you get a game under your belt and you've played and you may have a little positive momentum and all of that kind of thing. You do have to perhaps balance that out a little. But I think that's largely mitigated by the fact that the number one seed is number one for a reason. They're, you know, for the most part, a better team. And Texas was a better team than West Virginia even last weekend when they won 2 out of 3 to win the series. So that's why I don't worry so much about the whole issue about, well, they've got a game under belt, that sort of deal. So it is going to be Texas against West Virginia, and it'll be, as we pointed out, tongue-in-cheek, 4 o'clock first pitch, and we have to say it like that because we'll see how the length of these games are going. And judging from the length of the game that's going on right now, I'd say there's a decent shot this game, you know, the Texas game is not going to start on time. Now, the the TCU-Kansas State game that'll follow this Baylor-West Virginia game, it may fly past. And or this West Virginia, this Texas Tech-Baylor game that's going on may end up, zipping through. Right now, the Red Raiders are up 6-0 in the top of the fourth inning. So we'll see. Maybe it'll get going. Also, I should point this out, since it's 6-0, the 10-run rule in the Big 12 Conference that is in effect on only the getaway day of a series, the final game of a series, and it was put into play last Saturday since it was the final game of the Texas-West Virginia series since they went Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and the Longhorns ended it in 8 innings when they won 12-2. If you're up by 10 runs or more after 7 innings are completed on the final game of a series, then the game is over. Well, that rule does apply in the Big 12 tournament in every game except the championship. So it would be in play. They're going to the bottom of the fourth right now with Texas Tech up 6-0 on Baylor. And Mason Montgomery, the left-hander from Leander High. You remember him, Snoop. You remember when Mason was pitching for the Leander Lions. He looks really good right now and allowed a hit through the first 4 innings. So if Tech were to put 4 more runs on the board and it goes along at the clip that it's going on, it theoretically, in order for the Texas game to start on time at 4 o'clock, what has to happen is the games that are being played need to be played in 2 hours and 45 minutes. So the 9 a.m. game needs to be done by 11:45 because the teams are allowed 45 minutes on the field. So then the second game, which would be TCU and Kansas State, would start on time at 12:30. If that went 2 hours and 45 minutes and got done by 3:15, then the Texas game would start at 4. That's what it takes. The games have to average 2 hours and 45 minutes in length in order for the tournament to stay completely on schedule. We'll see how it goes. Right now, it's on. And for anybody who might have the question, if the game goes quicker than 2:45, say it only goes 2.5, they would not start the second game early. They would just start it on time because teams are on a time schedule of when they leave their hotel to go to the ballpark to get their batting practice in the indoor cages, because that's what you have to use is the indoor batting cages, obviously, with a game going on the field. So they wouldn't start a game early. They would start it later. They would start it on time in its regular time slot. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes. Right now, Texas Tech is up 6-0 on Baylor, and they're going to the bottom of the fourth here in Bricktown. And it's not good news, obviously, for Baylor in that they're trailing in the ball game 6-0. But it is also not good news in the fact that, and we pointed this out yesterday in looking at the tournament projections, that it's not good for Baylor in terms of their hopes of landing an at-large bid for the NCAA tournament, because Baylor is kind of skidding downhill here at the end of the regular season. The Bears lost 2 out of 3 in Stillwater to Oklahoma State a couple of weekends ago. No disgrace in that. Oklahoma State with an RPI of 16 is definitely going to be in a regional. And then, but what did hurt Baylor was dropping 2 of 3 at home to Oklahoma last weekend. So that has pushed them toward the bubble and really and truly pushed them on to the bubble. We'll have more on that coming up. But, again, it's 6-0 bottom of the fourth right now in the first game, Texas Tech up on Baylor. More on that. Obviously, we'll have the conversation with Mike Antico coming up. We have Inconceivable coming up later this hour as well. And then at the top of the hour at 11 o'clock, then we'll hand it over for starting an hour early edition of Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey. You got Craig Way with you. You got Light the Tower here on the Horn, 104.9, 101.9 AM 1260. We're live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com. Got a little uglier here in Oklahoma City. Now, I know that can mean a lot of things to a lot of different people. I'm talking about the baseball game going on at the Chickasaw Bricktown Ballpark. Nate Rombach has just hit a 2-run homer for Texas Tech, and it is now 8-0, and they've just ended the fourth inning. So, again, the importance of pointing that out is if this thing gets to a 10-run ball game through 7 innings, then the game would be over on the Big 12's 10-run rule. So it does apply in the Big 12 Conference Tournament up to the championship game itself. So it is 8-0 Texas Tech. They're going to the top of the fifth inning in the first game here in Oklahoma City, and we'll keep you post on that. Toward that end is time for our Longhorn Notebook, and it is brought to you by our good friends at Cedar Park over at Doors. Check them out online at cpdoors.com. The Longhorns, of course, play later today, and they'll be in action against the West Virginia Mountaineers, who won their Big 12 tournament opener, if you will. It was the play-in game, winning last night over Kansas 8-7, rallied from a 5-0 deficit in the second inning to come back and win. That takes West Virginia to 24-25. Kansas finishes its season at 30-27. For several of these Longhorns, in fact, the vast majority, almost all of them, in fact, this is a brand-new experience, the Big 12 Conference Tournament. Think about it. The last time that Texas played in a Big 12 tournament was 3 years ago, 2018. And by the way, the Longhorns also won the Big 12 regular season title that year. That was when Cody Clemens was the player of the year in the Big 12 Conference. Longhorns went on to the College World Series, but they didn't do well here. They went 2-BBQ. They won won the regular season, then came up here, lost 2 games, and went home. And they were done after 2 games. Very few guys are still on the Longhorn roster from that 2018 team. Zach Zuby is one of those guys. DJ Petrinsky is one of those guys. But very few got Austin Todd, who, of course, is injured, is one of those guys. Very few guys. So for just about everybody else, playing in the conference tournament is a brand-new experience. So what happened in 2019? Longhorns didn't qualify. They were the odd team out. They were the ninth-place finisher, and they didn't have a play-in game that year. So Texas didn't make the conference tournament in 2019 when they went 27-27. And then, of course, there was no tournament last year due to the COVID issues. So due to the pandemic, there was no tournament. So this is the first time that Texas will have played in the Big 12 tournament in 3 years. Some guys, however, do have some conference tournament experience. Most notably is the Longhorns senior center fielder, the grad transfer, Mike Antico. Remember, Antico transferred from St. John's. So he played in the Big East tournament and in a couple of different places. They played 1 year, they had the Big East tournament in Omaha at TD Ameritrade Park because Creighton is in the Big East, although it does seem kind of weird that the Big East tournament would be Omaha, but it was. He played in that. So if the Longhorns, by the way, get to Omaha and play in the College World Series, Mike Antico will be one of those guys who has played in that ballpark before. That was one of the venues. He mentioned another one we were talking about that they played in as well, I believe, in Ohio he talked about. So there were a couple of different things. So now Mike was getting ready and is getting ready for his first Big 12 tournament experience. That was one of the things that the Longhorn senior grad transfer center fielder Mike Antico and I visited about in talking about this matchup.
Well, for a lot of these guys, it's their first experience of a conference tournament. You've played in conference tournaments before, so at least playing in the conference tournament won't be new to you, but this is kind of different coming to Oklahoma City for you.
Yeah, it definitely is. I mean, it's the best time of the year, these conference tournaments. They're big games. Every game matters, and, you know, it's great to be here, definitely.
Have you, I guess the best way to describe this, has everybody kind of come back down to earth a little bit because of what happened on Saturday? It was such a unique environment. You guys were taking care of your business, and the roar comes up from the crowd, the K-State had beaten TCU. I know there was this big ripple of excitement going on. How has everybody processed all of that over the past, say, 72 hours?
Yeah, it was definitely an exhilarating moment. You know, it was a moment that I don't think any of us will forget, but you know, now we just turn the page and on to the next thing. It was, you know, we won our first championship the regular season. Now the next goal is to win the tournament.
You turned a page of your own during the course of the season. Like you said, I never did really give up or have any doubts or anything like that. But what was there one single thing as much as anything that stood out to you about how you were able to turn the page and flip the script?
Yeah, I think it was really when the coaches brought me in to talk to me and said, you know, they just got together with me and said, you know, what do we got to do to get you going? And, you know, we worked on some things, talked about some things. And I think from that point on, that helped me turn the page and move on and was like, all right, here we go. You know, we got to make an adjustment, got to make a change. And from then on, it went pretty well.
One of the things that you really didn't have to make that much of an adjustment on, at least to the naked eye, is how you go about stealing bases. That's been there from the start as well. But what's unique about your style is you're not getting the biggest lead on the planet. Can you kind of discuss what's going through your mind as you're trying to get the read on the pitcher and how much of a lead you want to give yourself before a secondary lead before you take off?
Gotcha. Yeah, I would say that I get to take the same lead every time where I'm comfortable because, you know, you want to be able to get back I want to be able to take a step and a dive to get back perfectly. But, you know, it's really all about the jump. I'm just trying to get a good jump. I want to be able to take about 3 steps before the pitcher releases the ball, you know what I mean? So if I get that jump, I know I probably got the bag stolen. And if I don't, I probably should shut it down.
When it comes to a conference tournament, in your past, have you felt more relaxed? Is it more of a fun time? I mean, we know the games that matter most are coming in the regional and so on from there. But how do you mentally approach a conference tournament?
Like I said, it's one of the best times of the year. You know, it's an exciting. We've played all these teams before. You know, so it's kind of just like a small round robin to see, you know, who's the best right now, and I think we have a great shot at winning it.
Well, they certainly hope they do, and they are the one seed. I did point out the last time they were in the Big 12 tournament, they got eliminated in 2 games. So, but again, most of those guys were not here for that team 3 years ago. And it should be pointed out that team that went to and barbecue here went on and won the regional and super regional, went to the College World Series, went to Omaha. So it's not always a bad thing if you get eliminated here and do that, but the goal is, and we've pointed out that that's been the impressive thing, one of the impressive things to hear from this team, is that they really and truly do want to win this tournament to further cement it. It's another thing to play for, as they say. It's another chance to win something else. So we'll find out as they go forward. And again, we'll hope that it's that things start on time at 4 o'clock this afternoon. Right now, Texas Tech is up 8-0 on Baylor, with Baylor batting with one on and one out in the top half of the fifth inning. And Mason Montgomery has already struck out 10 Baylor Bears in the contest, working in the fifth inning. Toward the end, about where the Longhorns are in terms of the national analysis, we pointed out the tournament projections, and the Longhorns definitely have drawn the attention, certainly not just of the tournament selection committee, and the bids will come out on Monday. Sunday, by the way, is when the host sites will be announced. So the regional host sites will be announced, and then on with the field of 64, then coming out on Monday, on Memorial Day. It's Selection Monday, as it always goes. So right now, the tournament selection committee, according to D1Baseball.com, would have Texas as the number 3 overall national seed in a regional that would include UCLA, Liberty, and Stony Brook. Now, those are the D1.com, baseball.com projections. Baseball America also has its own projections. And in Baseball America, they have Texas as the number 2 overall seed. Interesting in that both sets of projections have Texas as the number 2 seed. Both sets of projections have Texas hosting in a top 8 national seed, but D1Baseball.com has the Longhorns as the number 3 overall seed. Baseball America lists Texas as the number 2 overall seed. Both sets of projections, however, have UCLA coming to Austin as the number 2 seed to play there. And the thought process, I'm sure, on those who are putting those things together, like Teddy Cahill, who's part of the staff at Baseball America, and then, of course, Kendall Rogers and Mark Etheridge and the rest of the staff at D1 Baseball, is that UCLA, some of the West Coast teams that are not going to be hosting regionals, those that are getting in, they've got to send them somewhere, and they're not going to play in another Pac-12 like Arizona or Stanford in the regional round. That wouldn't happen. If Gonzaga winds up hosting a regional, and both sets of projections, I think, do have – well, no, Baseball America does not have Gonzaga hosting. D1 Baseball does. But that would be one other West Coast site. But they wouldn't send a Pac-12 team to, like, say, Eugene, Oregon. They wouldn't send them to, Tucson, and they wouldn't send them to Palo Alto. You wouldn't send a Pac-12 team to play at another Pac-12 regional site. So they got to send them somewhere, and both sets of projections have UCLA coming to Austin. The Baseball America projections have Texas hosting. UCLA is the 2. Duke coming in as a 3. The Blue Devils' late-season surge has kind of played their way into being an at-large team. And then Norfolk State, which pulled the big surprise, winning the Mid-Eastern Athletic Conference tournament. That's already happened. Norfolk State is going to be in the field of 64. The MEAC and the Southwestern Athletic Conference have already finished their conference tournaments. Both of those are HBCUs, historically Black College and University Leagues. And Southern University from Baton Rouge upset Jackson State, who went undefeated, unbeaten in conference play, in SWAC play, but Jackson State got beat by Southern, got upset in the tournament championship, so Jackson State will be staying home. They won't get in. But Baseball America's projections have Arkansas as the number 1 seed, and they have Oklahoma State as the number 2 seed in Fayetteville. Now, that's got some folks in Stillwater a little bit stirred up about it, so because really and truly what that would mean mathematically, what that would mean would be that Oklahoma State is the 32nd best team, or the 16th number 2 seed. And we know that's not the case. They're better than that, but that's where regionality comes into play and travel considerations and things like that. So Oklahoma State is listed in both sets of projections, both by Baseball America and also in D1Baseball.com, as being the number 2 seed and playing in Fayetteville. The rest of that projection in D1 in Fayetteville has Oklahoma State 2, Indiana State 3, and Oral Roberts the 4. In the Baseball America projections, They have Oklahoma State is the 2, Fairfield is the 3, and Oral Roberts is the 4. Fairfield is that program we told you about. They've lost one ball game this year total, just one, and their RPI is number 2 in the country. Texas is the number 3 RPI right now. But Fairfield is probably not going to draw any more interest from the tournament selection committee than being a number 3 seed. And if they lose and do not win the Metro Atlantic Athletic Conference tournament, there's speculation that they may get completely left out. If they would have 3 losses at that point because they would lose 2 games in conference tournament play. So we'll see how that plays out from there. The rest of the Baseball America projections have Vanderbilt as the 3, Arizona as the 4, Notre Dame as the 5, Mississippi State 6, Tennessee 7, Texas Tech as the 8. And the Red Raiders look like they're very interested in playing their way into a top 8 national seed. You know, after they lost that series to Baylor, Tech had played its way even out of hosting for about a week, and then they started to climb back in it. The Red Raiders, of course, own regular season series victories over TCU and Texas. They finished in 3rd in the league. They went 14-10 in the conference, but it's pretty much theorized by both of these projections and other projections as well that Texas Tech has now hopped past TCU because the Horned Frogs have dropped 3 consecutive series to end the regular season. They lost the series to Texas at the start of the month, then a non-conference series to the Louisiana Monroe, which really was a head-scratcher, and then, of course, the dramatic weekend series last weekend to Kansas State when they were 3 outs, 2 outs, really, 2 outs away from winning the outright conference regular season title. There was 1 out and nobody on with their ace closer, Halen Green, on the mound. And then Kansas State scored 7 unanswered runs, got the 3-run walk-off homer by Chris Ceballos, won the ball game. TCU lost complete control of the Big 12 at that point and lost the game, lost the series, and lost the number 1 seed. Texas wound up capturing the number 2 seed. And it's theorized by many that they have now lost their hold on the top 8 national seed. The D1Baseball.com projections have TCU as the number 11 overall seed in a regional that would host Arizona State, Dallas Baptist, and Bryant. In Baseball America, they don't have the Horned Frogs dropping quite that far, but they do have them dropping to the number 10 seed, and it would be interesting because the what they have lined up is Nebraska as the 2, Dallas Baptist as the 3, and Stony Brook as the 4. So there's some Big 12 considerations there. In Baseball America, by the way, they have Baylor in the field as a 3 playing in Greenville, North Carolina at a regional hosted by East Carolina. East Carolina, by the way, may be endangering its regional hosting status. They got clubbed by Memphis yesterday in double elimination play in the American Conference tournament going on. They got beat 11-1 in that, so they got to climb back up through the losers bracket, through the elimination bracket, to try to win that tournament and perhaps cement their status for getting an opportunity to host a region. But again, Baylor is not doing itself any favors right now. They come in having lost back-to-back conference series, and right now the Bears are, as they watch a fly ball being caught, down 8-0 to Texas Tech as they bat in the bottom half of the 5th inning. So it's 8-0, Red Raiders leading that game in the bottom half. Baylor, of course, if they lose, would go into the elimination bracket, the loser's bracket. They would take on the loser of the 2nd game of the tournament that'll follow. That's TCU and Kansas State. And that will be an elimination game also at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. All right, when we come back, we'll have our inconceivable segment for today, and we'll wrap up this 1-hour version of Life the Tower with Chad and Trey coming up with an extended edition of Shirts and Skins. This is Light the Tower on the Horn, 1049, 1019, AM 1260, live, local, and digital on the Horn app.
Using the Horn, I don't think it means what you think it means.
I can tell you that Inconceivable is always brought to you by our good friend Dr. Matthew J. Crawford and his outstanding staff at Austin Orthopedics. If you have a sports-related injury or also more questions about the prevention and treatment of sports-related injuries, check them out on the web at austin-orthopedic.com. Speaking of sports-related injuries, Snoop Daniel, Did you hear what happened to Cleveland Indians pitcher Zach Plesac?
Yeah.
You heard about this?
I think he hurt himself with taking his shirt off or something.
Yeah, he's going to have to be placed on the injured list. Terry Francona, the Indians manager, yesterday said the team's going to have to place their starter, Zach Plesac, on the injured list because of a non-displaced fracture of his right thumb. He started Sunday's game against the Twins in Cleveland, allowed 5 runs in 3 2/3 innings, so he struggled. So then he walks off the field. He's very, very unhappy, goes into the clubhouse, and then, according to the Indians, was, quote-unquote, rather aggressively ripping off his shirt. And when he did, he caught his thumb on a chair in the locker room. This happened on Sunday. So he called the athletic trainer, and Francona said that he called me and said it was pretty swollen yesterday, as you can imagine. Our wheels started to turn. So he met with the trainer, and the swelling did not go down yesterday. So he underwent an X-ray and revealed the fracture. So the Indians are a bit of a bind now. Tristan McKenzie got demoted on Saturday, so now they've had to, you know, bullpen things. He's 4-3, by the way, but that goes up there with the, I forget who it was for the Indians, who was it? Glenn Allen Hill, can't remember, that hurt himself with a spider and was trying to get away from a spider or something, and then you had the Odubi McDowell slicing open his thumb, buttering a roll at the team's welcome home luncheon in early April when he was playing for the Rangers back in the 80s.
You know, that happens a lot. Like when you throw an anger temper tantrum, or when I was a kid, I would always wind up hurting myself in some way.
Did you?
It's like the universe. The universe would make me like flail or something, so I'd hit my hand against a chair or something. I don't know.
So there you go. You know what would make you feel better? Maybe a trip to Disneyland, right?
Yes.
You've never been to Disneyland,
never.
Right? We've talked about this,
never.
Right? All right. If you go, maybe if you want to try this new sandwich they have, it's called the Pimini, P-Y-M, Pimini. But if you do, you might want to take a group with you to eat it. It's a large sandwich. It's a panini style. It contains salami, rosemary ham, sun-dried tomato, and spread on toasted focaccia bread. Sounds good, right? $99.99, $100 for a sandwich. But folks who've had it and the people out there say it's actually a pretty good deal because it's a really big sandwich at $100. There is an individual size available for $15 of this sandwich. The more costly version of this Pimini serves between 6 and 8 peoples. So if you're talking about the Disney dining math, it's really not that expensive. If you split it 8 ways, the sandwich is a savings over if you just ordered it individually. It'd work out to just a little over $12 per person if you do that. So keep that in mind. And speaking of Disney, sad news today. Were you a fan when you were younger of The Little Mermaid?
No, I wasn't a fan, but I knew of it. I don't know. It was a girls' show. Okay.
Well, it was kids.
Oh, yeah.
The Little Mermaid's kids, okay. Animated movie.
Yes,
right?
I know. Mm-hmm.
All right. For those who are familiar with it, Samuel E. Wright, he was the actor who voiced Sebastian the Crab. Under the Sea! The one who was kind of Jamaican.
Yeah.
He was the advisor to King Triton. This was in the much-loved 1989 Disney film. It marked the high point of his lengthy career in cinema, television, theater. He passed away at the age of 74. His death was confirmed by the town of Montgomery, New York, where he had founded a cultural center with his family. His daughter also confirmed the passing at the age of 74. That's him.
Life under the sea is better than anything they got up there. The seaweed is always greener in somebody else's lake. You
That's
dream
him.
About going up there, but that is a big mistake. Just look at the world around you, right here on the ocean floor. Such wonderful things around you.
Here comes the chorus part right here.
What would you looking
right
for?
Here.
On
under the sea.
Yeah.
Under the sea. Darling, it's bitter down where it's wetter.
Where
take
it's
it
wetter.
From me.
All right, so there you are. There, Samuel Lee Wright, he passed away at the age of 74. So he was, but that was one of Disney's, not only one of their most popular movies, but also one of the most popular songs to come from one of their movies. So, okay, got to let you know two other things here, Snoop. Were you a fan of Bugs Bunny growing up?
Yes. Love
okay.
Bugs Bunny.
So all right, so you were familiar with the Tasmanian Devil, right?
Yes, I had the T-shirts, the ones they sold at Walmart.
That one? Anyway, yeah. What for you, Barry B?